Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we will be discussing all the latest with respect to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via social media using hashtag GiantsChat. And we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Jack Wang, who covers the UCLA Bruins for the LA Daily News, he's actually now going to be covering the Los Angeles Rams. He'll be joining us in a few minutes, so we'll get more on Miles Jack as well as the rest of the UCLA Bruins class. But before we have him come on earlier in the week, and this is something that we haven't yet discussed it on the program, with the players returning for the start of the offseason program, Eli Manning, Justin Pugh, as well as Jonathan Hankins all spoke to the media through a course of a few conference calls, and they sort of set out their goals for the upcoming season. Few things I think we should hit on that came out of those conference calls. Number one, Jonathan Hankins suffered a season-ending injury midway through last year, the torn pectoral muscle, and he made it very clear he's ready to go, and he expects to take part in the entire offseason program, so that is certainly a positive, and he's also clearly, which is not necessarily a surprise, looking forward to line up with Damon Harrison. I'm sure everybody on this defensive line is ready to get to work, but the fact that either that Hankins will be ready to go start of the offseason program, now that's a big step in the right direction, considering, you know, for a new defensive line coach, for a new coaching staff, you want to have all four of those guys ready to go once workouts start.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, the biggest disappointment, I think, with this defense, the Giants' defense last season, was they could not stop the run. So now you go out and you spend a lot of money, you bring in snacks, and if Hankins can stay healthy, my goodness, I mean, listen, the Giants arguably could have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, going from arguably one of the worst last year. I mean, that is a really phenomenal turnaround. Of course, barring everybody stays healthy, I think another big question mark going from inside out is, you know, who's going to play the right side of the line. Right now it's JPP. Does it become Olivier Vernon, who, by the way, I just saw in the lunchroom, and I had an opportunity to introduce myself and say hi and welcome him to the Giants. And man, does he look intimidating?
Oh, yeah.
He looks intimidating.
Yeah, his arms are massive.
His arms, one of his biceps is the size of like my thigh. I mean, it's just like unbelievable. So it was really cool to see him in the lunchroom and seeing the new faces around. So, I mean, that's a huge turnaround. The potential of what this defensive line could be. Lance.
Well, and everybody seems to be excited. Even Justin Pugh was talking about going up against these guys during practice every day. That's only going to make the offensive line stronger. Eli Manning mentioned having an improved defense, which you alluded to, should hopefully help them run a few more plays on offense, get the ball back more often. So, you know, clearly right now there's a lot of chatter with respect to that. We ultimately have to see how that all translates to the field. Speaking of Justin Pugh, you know, he made it clear that this offseason he knows he's going to be a guard. And that is the plan. So mentally, he's preparing for that. And I thought it was interesting. He said for the second straight offseason, he worked out with Jay Glazer out in California, working on that MAA fighting moves to, you know, get him in a position where he could be a little bit more aggressive as well as maintain his weight. Because I thought it was interesting that Justin Pugh pointed out when you play the guard position, it's a little bit different in terms of the physicality that you need to prepare for as well as the weight you need to maintain. So that I thought was interesting. But he's of the mindset going in that he is going to stay at guard. I know there's some talk about would they move him to right tackle, but Justin Pugh seems to be set that he's going to be that left guard for this coming season.
You know, a lot of football players work with Jay Glazer, mind you, and they say that the biggest help they get from him is that punch, whether it's wide receivers who work with him as well, linemen, whatever the case may be, it's that initial punch, it's that first move that everybody's trying to, like, you know, it's all about those moves. So that's fun. That's good. Good for Justin Pugh that he's kind of going out of that normal box and trying some different things. That's exciting.
Absolutely. And we'll get into more about what those three players had to say on a conference call earlier this week. We also want to thank those of you watching strictly on Twitter. If you move on over to Giants.com, you can continue to follow the program. And we are now joined by a very special guest as we will continue to preview all of the top prospects getting set to throw their names into the mix for the 2016 NFL Draft. And today, we're going to focus on the UCLA Bruins. And kind enough to give us a few minutes is Jack Wang, who covered the UCLA Bruins through the LA Daily News. He's obviously going to be switching over to cover the LA Rams now that the Rams relocated to Los Angeles. Jack, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Great. How's everything with you?
Doing very well. Well, clearly the top prospect out of the UCLA bunch, it goes without saying, is Miles Jack. And you know, you had an opportunity to watch him closely, up close and personal. The biggest question mark, I guess, for Miles Jack is the health concern, considering he suffered that knee injury in early September, missed the majority of the season, as well as most of the pre-draft process. We'll get into his versatility certainly in a second, but in terms of the injury concern, what perhaps remains here that could concern any NFL scouts in terms of him moving forward with his NFL career?
I think it's just a matter of waiting until he reaches 100% and whether or not, you know, the teams evaluating him believe that he will reach 100% at some point. And, you know, it's been a while since he got injured back in September, so it seems like they're being very cautious with it. It's not... You know, even from the very beginning, it wasn't a devastating injury. You know, this was a meniscus tear, which often you see guys come back from in just a few weeks and don't necessarily have to miss a whole season. But in his case, you know, it was a very particular meniscus tear, and the way that they repaired it, which often means a better long-term recovery prospect, also required a longer initial recovery period. But, you know, I think as early as, I want to say, October or November, you know, we kind of just walking around campus, you would see him walking around, and he wasn't limping, didn't look visibly like there was anything wrong with him. So I think at this point, it's kind of just a matter of, do you believe there might be any issues down the road? He looked, you know, a little rusty, but pretty impressive in terms of just mobility, backpedaling, things like that at his pro day.
Jack, hi, Anita Marks here. Thank you so much for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live this afternoon. Really appreciate it. You know, I'm really curious. I love Miles Jack. I would be thrilled if he falls to the Giants at 10 and they do select him. We have a lot of Giants fans who do watch this show and think I'm absolutely insane to think that he would drop to 10, but more and more boards have him dropping to 10 and potentially being available to the Giants. Why is that happening? Why is it gone from, oh, he's not going to get past the Jacksonville Jaguars at 5, to now there's about 3 or 4 mock drafts out there that do believe he will fall at 10?
You know, I'm not really sure why he's dropping. You know, assuming he's healthy, I think he's almost a lock for a top 5 pick, almost certainly, you know, a lock to be a top 10 pick. And it kind of reminds me, I think some of it might just be kind of the pre-draft scuttlebutt. You know, a couple of years ago, another linebacker coming out of UCLA, Anthony Barr, I think he was supposed to be, when the season ended, everyone was super high on him, thought he was a lock to go in the first half of the first round. And I remember kind of in the last month or so leading up to the draft, there was a lot more backlash, a lot of people picking his game apart, some thought about whether or not he would drop out of the first round or at least go kind of in the bottom of the first round. Day of the draft, ended up going 9th overall to the Minnesota Vikings, and I think that's worked out pretty well for them so far. The interesting thing about, I think, the talk of Miles potentially falling a little bit is that it doesn't seem like there's been that same kind of backlash. Now, besides the concerns about his health and the fact that he hasn't run a 40 for anyone yet, no one's really looked at his game and said, you know, this is what won't translate to the next level. I think in terms of just looking at his film, it's almost unanimous that he's about as good of a can't-miss prospect as you could hope for on the defensive end.
Well, Jack, speaking of that, let's talk about what we all see on film, and I think versatility is probably a good term that comes to mind. You know, this is a player that played running back, played safety, played linebacker. I mean, is there any position it seems as if he didn't play at UCLA? But, you know, with all of this versatility, with all of this upside, you know, sometimes it becomes a little too overwhelming in terms of, well, you know, what's his ideal fit in an NFL scheme? Where do you see his rightful fit at the NFL level, whether it be in a 4-3 or a 3-4, what is the ideal position, the ideal role for Miles Jack?
I think you want to keep him as a cover linebacker. You know, that can mean a few different things depending on your scheme, but you want him. I think, you know, his heart is set on defense from the day he arrived at UCLA through all the games where he looks great at running back. He's always said that, you know, he's a defense-first player. And I think that, you know, you want to keep a guy kind of doing what he loves. So, you know, I don't know how viable it is to try and maybe throw him on offense for a snap here and there. But his main value is the fact that he's, you know, a pretty well-built linebacker that can match up against a receiver. So if you need to move him, if you want to work him as kind of a safety type player in some packages, that's really where I think you can get the most out of him. There was one game a couple years ago when UCLA played against USC, and they basically almost used him as a cornerback and just matched him one-on-one against Nelson Agholor. I think held Agholor to one or two catches for 5 to 10 yards. And that was, I think, the best job that anyone did on Agholor all season.
Jack, you mentioned that he went up against a few notable wide receivers. What about tight ends? How much did they use him in matchups with tight ends? And, you know, how did he fare in terms of that?
I think that's a little harder to say just because there weren't that many tight ends in the Pac-12. You know, I think all over college you see less and less of the traditional tight end, and especially in the Pac-12 where there were a lot of spread offenses. I think Stanford was probably one of the few teams that really did keep a traditional tight end. But, again, his combination of size and strength and speed, I think, you know, even if he's a guy that you might not necessarily want ideally covering a tight end, I think he can do that in a pinch if you need him to.
You know, there's been a lot of comparison of him to Ray Lewis. I know he's come out and said, whoa, slow your roll. Don't compare me to somebody who's, you know, obviously one of the best to ever play the position. But then apparently there was a general manager who came out and spoke with CBSSports.com and said that he's even faster than Ray Lewis. Your thoughts on the linebacker that first comes to mind for you in regard to who you think Miles Jack compares to or really has the potential to become?
That's a little tricky. I remember once we were talking to Jeff Ulbrich, who's with the Falcons now, but he was a defensive coordinator at the time. And I don't remember the names that he threw out, but I remember he picked a few different names in terms of comparing Miles. And I think Patrick Willis, I think, was one that he threw out back then. And that was in terms of kind of using him playing behind the ball. The other one that he threw out was Chad Brown. And that was Miles, using Miles kind of more as an outside rusher, which I think if you want to pick out the flaws in Miles' game is that he's not a great natural pass rusher. But again, that's probably not the role that you want to use him for if you want him to flourish. You know, it's a facet of his game that might develop down the line. But names aside, I think his skill set kind of fits where the position of linebacker is going in terms of you want a guy that can stay on the field even as you change schemes and can move into different positions. And can just have that versatility that we've kind of harped about.
Well, I think that's a good point, considering, Jack, you know, we see more and more offenses. You got three wide receivers out on the field, more so than two and a running back. So, you know, instead of taking the extra linebacker off the field, if you could have a linebacker there that can match up, as you mentioned, with wide receivers, with tight ends, who you could move around, I mean, that's only more of a benefit for a player like Miles Jack for the scheme, considering you don't have to worry about taking him off the field under those circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's kind of that new – it's hard to compare him to guys like Ray Lewis and guys that were more traditional linebackers, because the game has changed since then. And I think it's kind of an exciting place to be – it's an exciting time to be watching kind of the young linebackers come up and to watch them flourish now.
Talking with Jack Wang, who covers the UCLA Bruins for the LA Daily News. We'll also be covering the LA Rams this upcoming season. Clearly, Miles Jack stands out from the rest of the pack, Jack, but there's plenty of other prospects that played for UCLA this season, including another linebacker, Aaron Wallace, who actually filled in for Miles Jack when he got hurt and also played behind Anthony Barr. He's the son of former Raiders linebacker by the same name, Aaron Wallace. Not a lot of experience out of Wallace in terms of his collegiate playing career. Really only had 1 year as a starter. What's his ceiling, perhaps, at the next level? And what did you see out of his senior year where maybe he can fit into an NFL scheme?
I think he's a guy that works really hard. He's been around the program for a while, was kind of a perennial backup until this last year, when I think he surprised just about everyone covering the team by leading the team in sacks. And he was actually the guy who 3 years ago started the season as an outside linebacker for the first game, and then was replaced by Miles Jack for the next 2 years. And I always thought that he was a little too slow, just kind of watching him in practices. I think he showed at his combine that he was maybe a little bit faster than some people thought. He certainly didn't look like his speed hampered him too much his last season. I don't think he's, maybe necessarily a high ceiling guy in terms of the NFL. Maybe a guy that's worth looking at in the late rounds. If he goes undrafted, certainly worth inviting for a few workouts. And he's a guy that I think if he can stick around in the league for a few years and carve out a kind of consistent career as a reserve or a special teams guy, then that'll be more than what a lot of people covering UCLA had expected just a year or two ago. And I want to say that with kind of – I'm not meaning to denigrate him in any way, but just kind of more of a workman-like player than a guy that blows you away on film.
Last question for me, and I'm going back to Miles Jack because, obviously that's the one guy that the majority of people watching this show really care about. But mm-hmm. I know we talked a lot about him on the field, the scheme he might fit in, what expectations, but what is he like off the football field? Like, give us the character of one Miles Jack.
He's a fun guy to talk to. He's a charismatic guy, but I think he can be a bit of a hothead. In terms of talking to him one-on-one, never had any kind of problems. He's not the guy that's, gonna blow up reporters or anything like that, very media-friendly. But, he's had throughout his career kind of an issue with penalties, and they're usually not – it's usually things like unsportsmanlike conduct. There's one that he was called for that was pretty memorable when he was up playing at Washington, I think, for the first time and scored four touchdowns and kind of licked his fingers after one of them and got hit with a flag for that one. And there was an incident back in preseason camp a year ago, or a little less than a year ago, since this would be in August, where he started kind of getting in a fight with one of the offensive linemen and had to be pulled away by his teammates, by his coaches, was kind of yelling and just acting out in a way that was really unusual to see, even in a sport like football, where you see kind of scuffles all the time. And it was during a practice where there were a lot of NFL scouts present. So I think at the time that was something that was a little bit of a cause for concern.
Talking with Jack Wang, who covers the UCLA Bruins for the LA Daily News. They have a number of prospects on the offensive side of the ball, Jack. You know, not necessarily anybody that in particular is highly ranked, but, you know, if I were to ask you, if you could pinpoint maybe one or two guys that may go in the mid to late rounds that is notable to watch out for, who would that be on the offensive side for UCLA?
I think the two receivers, Thomas Duarte and Jordan Payton. Now, Thomas Duarte kind of broke out this past season as Josh Rosen's favorite red zone target. He's always been a really – I think he's a guy that was underutilized through his first two seasons at UCLA for whatever reason. Just a really smooth route runner, good hands, doesn't drop passes very often, kind of knows how to use his body to box out defenders. The question, I think, for him would be whether or not he could transition into more of a true tight end position where he's being asked to block. Wasn't asked to do that a lot at UCLA. I'm not sure whether or not he's hard-nosed enough for that, but that's something he could certainly learn. But his more natural value is as a pass-catching tight end, which, you know, in the right scheme, could be very effective. In terms of Jordan Payton, he's kind of a well-rounded receiver that might not necessarily jump out in any one facet of his game, but is pretty solid all around. Not a big straight line speed guy, but usually pretty dependable for some yards after the catch. And one more, I think, on offense you want to keep your eye on is Paul Perkins. Kind of like Jordan Payton in the sense that he's been a little underrated through the last couple of years, even though he led the Pac-12 in rushing. He's a guy that Stanford, pretty much any opposing coach you talk to, had great things to say. Stanford coach David Shaw said that he's a guy that you'll probably see 10 years from now having had a very long and successful NFL career. He's a guy that kind of does all the little things you would want from a running back. You know, he can block, he can catch passes out of the backfield. And, you know, for a team that maybe wants to use a running back by committee, as so many teams do now, he can be a very effective option.
He's 5'10", 208, so clearly in terms of stature, he's not a very big guy. Is that perhaps why he really, you think, can only be used as a committee guy? I'm assuming how UCLA used him, he's not really an inside runner that's going to carry a big load. Is that a fair synopsis?
I don't see him as a guy that necessarily is going to bowl through defenders, but he's very good at identifying holes. And I think the challenge now is seeing whether or not he can do that as consistently at the next level, where defenders are so much more talented and defenses are going to be so much more prepared than they might have been at the college level, where sometimes, you know, teams might have some gimmicky defenses to make up for some lack of personnel. You're rarely going to counter that in the NFL. So he's a guy that, you know, a little bit undersized. I think he could probably put on a little bit more weight, but really, really good vision. So it'll be interesting to see how much that translates to the pros.
Jack, before we let you go, one other defensive player that I want to get your thoughts on, just because of his background as a high school wrestler, and he's still very young, is the nose tackle Kenny Clark, who probably is maybe a little high up according to some of the rankings. You know, how has he developed over the course of his UCLA career? Because, you know, his maneuvers as a wrestler sort of translated, it felt, over to his collegiate days. But the question is, can he continue this pace moving to the next level?
I think he can. And I say that because of the way I think we really saw him develop through his junior season. Through his first 2 years, he was a really dependable run stopper. And as you said, I think a lot of that was because of his wrestling background. He really knew how to use his hands, really knew how to gain leverage. And I remember talking to him back when he was a freshman, and he said he felt like having been a wrestler that imbued a lot of mental toughness in him. You know, he said that wrestling was kind of the toughest sport that he'd ever done because of all the practices. I think back in Rialto, Carter High in Rialto, out near San Bernardino, they had just this like one hot room where they would practice, and the practices were just miserable. So he felt like that was kind of an instrumental part of what made him a good defensive tackle. But what we really saw this past season was that he became a credible pass rusher. He might have tied the team in sacks, or was at least second on the team in sacks, I think right behind Aaron Wallace. And it was something that I think he acknowledged that, you know, he's not a great pass rusher by any means, but the fact that he so clearly was able to shore up what was probably his biggest weakness was very encouraging.
Well, Jack, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, anytime.
You got it. Jack Wang, who covers the UCLA Bruins for the LA Daily News. He's now moving over to the LA Rams beat, so he'll be covering the NFL team that's moving from St. Louis. A lot of insight there on the UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, it's like I said, you know, I think it's really interesting. You know, when all these mock drafts came out, I mean, it was a pipe dream to even think that Miles Jack would still be available at 10, but more and more each and every week he's falling. And you know, unfortunately, I was hoping to try to get some information from Jack in regard to why is this? Why is he falling? I mean, I thought it was interesting the point he made that that there were a few scouts that were at that one practice where apparently he just lost his temper. But I don't want to sit here and say that that's it.
Yeah, I'd be surprised that that's the one.
Yeah.
I mean, the many mock drafts are fluctuating, though. I've seen some at 10. We've gone over some where he's 5th overall, 7th. I don't know if there's really a consistent trend across the board where he's dropping. I just think that the numbers tend to fluctuate in where he's ultimately going to be selected.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is when the mock drafts first came out, mock draft 1, 2, nobody had him at 10. So now we're at mock draft 4, 5, and there's at least 5 drafts that have him falling to 10. So, you know, anyway, I mean, listen, it's going to be fun. Regardless, that Thursday night is going to be an absolute blow. What are you doing for the draft, by the way?
I don't know yet. My plans are sort of up in the air.
Okay.
In terms of exactly what I'm doing.
Okay.
Yes.
I love it. I love it.
I'm going to watch regardless, or I'm going to do whatever I'm doing.
I was in Chicago last draft. I'm not a really big fan with the way that that they handle things. The theater that they're in is so small that it has to be inside and outside. It's cold. It's still cold over there. It's, you know what I mean? It's just, I miss it in New York. But let's face it, nobody can do it like New York does it, right?
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, yeah. They'd been here for so many years. Unfortunately, there was some conflict, so they had to move it to Chicago.
Also, I was told that the reason that it just didn't move to Chicago, it's supposed to circulate. It's supposed
that
to...
That was at least part of the initial plan.
Right.
But, you know, like anything else, if they like Chicago, they may try to, you know, keep it there for a few years. L.A. was another one that's been thrown out.
That'd be great. Hopefully it's in L.A. next
year.
You
know, I always say it's not the location. It's the whole point of the draft. I don't think most of the teams don't even go to the draft anyway. They're just worried about getting the prospect.
Yeah,
they're not worried about
they're in their war room.
Yeah,
but I'm
whether
just,
the air is flowing correctly.
But based on the
forth.
Media that's there, I mean, it's just it's a very cramped space. They just need more space. And let's face it, each and every year, the draft, the NFL period, the combine, whatever the NFL has their hands in, gets bigger and bigger and more coverage. And you know, it's king. Let's face it, the NFL is king when it comes to professional sport.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. We were joined by Jack Wang, first half of the program, talked about the UCLA Bruins. You want to get into the draft. You want to get into the players returning for the offseason program. We'll certainly hit on a variety of different issues. Matt is in East Islip. He gets us going on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Matt, what's happening?
How are you?
Doing well, Matt. How's things with you?
Good, man, good. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the draft, like everyone else, I'm sure. I had a couple things I wanted to say. I think a lot of people are so worried about, you know, obviously the defense, and that's totally understandable because last year was a train wreck. We all know that. But I think everyone's worried about the free safety position. We need to draft a guy, whatever, first two, three rounds. I think people forget we have Bennett Jackson, we have Nat Burhe, we have Mykel Thompson. And they also can fill a need at the slot corner as well. So right there, you may have two positions filled. Now, you don't know. That's some uncertainty why some people might say you draft it. But I think you have to see what you have internally. There's three guys right there for two spots, possibly. So to bring in another guy on top of that, yes, I understand later in the round maybe, just for competition, sure, why not? But they're young guys. They're not old guys running around. It's not like Eric Weddle or, you know, even someone older than that, you know. I think that's the first thing. Second thing I wanted to just say is, how do you not finish the offensive line right now in the draft? You know, you see it right now. The Tennessee Titans are doing that. They'll probably take Kuntzel, protecting Mariota with Lewan. And you know what? That's what you do with a franchise quarterback. Young, old, doesn't matter. You have to keep him on his feet, keep him protected, and keep the offense rolling. So if a guy like Stanley is there, why not? You know, move Flowers over to the right tackle spot. He's a road grader. He's a big, strong guy. We saw that. Played through injury all last year. You know, take a guy like Stanley and, you know, you could move him around. You could do something. I think that would be possible. And that's what I'm kind of looking forward to and seeing how they work with that. But I think there's just so much possibility with all those guys on the defensive side of the ball that we don't have to panic as much. But
well,
I don't know.
Well,
I want
but
to hear
depth,
you guys
is,
on that.
Depth is still important, Matt. I mean, you know, even though you have your front four set, I would still make the argument that, you know, you could still bring in another defensive end or defensive tackle for the sake of rotation and depth purposes because you have to prepare yourself for injury. I mean, those things are unpredictable. Just because you think you may have your starting 11 set, I still think there's room for other defensive players to be brought in. Your point about the young safeties on the roster, you know, I brought up yesterday, Bennett Jackson played the slot last year during training camp, and I think he's a legitimate option if they want to move him there, and he's a legitimate option at the safety position. I think there's enough youth on this roster where there's not necessarily a pressing need that they have to go out and draft a safety. You know, there's room to maybe still bring in a veteran safety late in free agency if they want to do that. But assuming these guys are healthy, you have a young nucleus of safeties that could very well come in and compete for the starting job. No argument there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think I don't disagree with what you're saying at all on the defense. I by no means is this defense, like you said, the front 11 maybe or the starting 11 maybe set somewhat. But no doubt, I don't think any Giants fan is really happy with the linebacker spot as of right now or – you know, with the depth of the defensive tackle position or, you know, there definitely are some improvements that need to be made. No questions asked. I was just saying as far as the free safety spot that every, you know, draft guru says we need a free safety, we need a free safety. Yes, we do, but they also don't realize the Giants have young quality, what are believed to be by the organization, quality guys on the roster. So I think that there's definitely some room for improvement, of course, with depth guys and quality depth. But, you know, you can't have guys, unfortunately, like certain players who start, you know, halfway through the year and you say, well, this guy was signed for, you know, a depth backup role, special teams. Now, all of a sudden, he's starting because you don't have depth. And I just think why not, as far as defense, you know, work on other areas as far as, you know, linebacker or defensive line like we have all offseason. And through the draft, I think early you need to hit the, like I said, hit the offensive line. And I think that's what they should do. But like I said, I want to hear a little bit more what you guys have to say about that. And thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, Matt. Thanks for weighing in. Appreciate it.
I really do believe that the Giants will be able to get a solid offensive lineman, whether it's in the second or third round. I don't feel that if they miss out on, let's say, Stanley's available or Conklin's available. And I think a big reason why is because you do have such immense defensive talent that's coming out that I do believe that the first round of the draft will be so defensive heavy that there's going to be some solid offensive linemen that are going to fall into the second and third round. So I do believe the Giants are going to address the offensive line position. Now, is it the number 10 pick overall? It could be. It very well could be. I think it's going to be a defensive player. But I do believe that they'll address it. I also think that they'll address the wide receiver position. And another thing in regard to the safeties, listen, this is something that has been communicated time and time again, not only from Jerry Reese, but Ben McAdoo and a number of the coaches here, and that is they believe in these redshirt freshmen. That's what they're calling them because The three guys went down with injuries, and they weren't able to play last year. And we're talking, of course, about Jackson, Burhey, and
Michael Thompson.
So this is an organization that believes in these guys, whether it's going to be a competition, whether it's that free safety position is one who it's theirs to lose, whatever the case may be. But I think it's going to be one of those three guys that are going to be playing opposite Landon Collins this year. And this organization believes in those guys. So regardless of what the analysts are saying, I don't think they're really listening to how this organization really feels about the players that are already on this roster.
Well, I have yet to see anybody project, for example, a safety going to the Giants, the 10th overall pick, let's say. Not that there may be a safety worthy of going. I mean, I know there's always chatter about maybe bringing in a veteran safety, but I think there's enough youth here that if you were to bring in a high prospect at the safety position, you're adding to already youth you have. I mean, if there's anything missing from this group, if you want to at least make that argument, it would be a veteran presence, not so much a young guy who's coming in right out of college, because Thompson, it's going to be his second year in the NFL. He's not that far removed. Nat Burhey's not that far removed. And if you add up all of their playing time, we're talking about 32 games between everybody. And the guy who's got the majority of those is Landon Collins, because he played all 16 games last year. The rest of the appearances are all made up from Cooper Taylor. Everybody else has not even gotten on the field in an NFL game. So, you know, assuming these guys stay healthy, you know, there's enough young, up-and-coming safeties on this roster. And Dave Merritt also is another guy I'd throw in there that's been talking this group up, too. He recently spoke to the media. Very high on Nat Burhey from a mental side. Was really excited about how Burhey stayed with the team last year, was in the classroom, was really gearing up to get ready to get back out on the field. So hopefully things remain good health-wise and these guys can actually go out there and compete.
Also, another point in regard, you just reminded me when you talked about Merritt, Coach Merritt, and you know, of course, in that period of time where, of course, the offensive and defensive coaches were made available to the media, one of the questions that was posed to him was, you know, how happy would you be if this team drafted Hargraves with the number 10 spot? And he said it'd be great. He says people need to understand this day and age in the NFL is a pass happy NFL. So even though, yeah, you might sit back and say, well, wait a minute, you know, you got Jenkins, you got DRC, they already have two starting corners, three corners start in the NFL now. You know what I mean? That's your base defense typically has three corners starting in the NFL. So even though if they do go out and draft Hargraves, chances are he's going to be part of their base starting defense. He said that's really important. People don't realize that.
I think it was Tim Walton, though, who mentioned that. Wasn't it Walton, the cornerback's coach? I thought he was the one that was asked about Hargraves.
Yeah,
I could be mistaken. I thought it was Walton because they were pressing him about DRC and Jenkins.
There were like a
so
lot
forth.
Of groups. Yeah. I know that was the group I was in with, I think, Patty and – yes, but it was Merritt.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Brian in New York. Brian, what's happening?
Oh, well,
get to Brian.
I call
yeah,
in and talk to you.
How are we doing, Brian?
But, I was just wondering maybe what you guys think about what I like to call a doomsday scenario, in which in the first nine picks, there are no quarterbacks taken. What would that do? Would we be likely to trade down?
Wait, you're saying no quarterbacks?
No quarterbacks are taken because we all know we're not looking for a quarterback, and
yeah, but
we want those
chances are you're going to have two quarterbacks taken before the Giants select. I mean, yeah, you will.
Oh well, As far as the thing where you said because it's so defensive heavy, I would think that wouldn't teams wait to take defensive players and take the offensive tackles first because it's not as far as a drop-off in the later rounds?
Yeah, well, I think after Tunzel, Conklin, and Stanley, I mean, I think there is somewhat of a drop-off at the tackle position, if that answers your question, Brian. So, I mean,
yeah.
if you don't strike on those three, you could certainly wait till the later rounds, but I think you have to expect the talent and the upside. There is a drop-off. Those seem to be the core three at the top, and then after that, you know, you have players, but I don't necessarily say that they're going to produce at the level of those three in year one.
Yep. And one more question. What are the chances that the Eagles take Elliott at 8?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, I could see them needing some depth at running back. It seems to be a good fit, depending on obviously what Peterson wants to run with his scheme. I think it's a strong possibility that he does perhaps go to the Eagles at 8.
All right, that's good. Thank you. I don't want to see a running back. I don't want to see a safety in the first round.
Well, I would be surprised with a safety too.
Yeah,
I appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
I don't anticipate. I don't anticipate a safety going in the first round. So I mean, it's interesting because now there's more and more talk of the Cowboys taking a quarterback at their spot, which I find interesting.
Well, I think a lot is going to depend on what Cleveland does. I mean, there's talk about Cleveland may move back now if they feel they get a quarterback lower. I think if the Cowboys are in a position where Ramsey's still available, I could see them taking Ramsey over perhaps taking a chance with a quarterback. So, I mean, there's so many different situations. I know the caller was alluding to best-case scenario for the Giants if we just run with his hypothetical. Let's say a quarterback isn't taken, and I think the question was would the Giants then draft or would they trade down? I still think there's going to be quality players, even if you know you have two quarterbacks that don't go and two defensive players or two offensive players are taken. I still think in the position the Giants are in, there's no point to trading down. I still think they could select somebody.
I'm with you. I don't believe the Giants are going to trade down. A lot of mock drafts, I know we've been talking about Floyd, the linebacker from Georgia, and a lot of mock drafts have him going to the Chicago Bears at 11. So and there's a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement about him right now. So based on the players that have been thrown out there in regard to who the Giants might covet, I don't think they have the luxury of trading down if one of those guys are really who they want. I don't think they, because they're around that 10. I don't think you can risk it and move down.
Yeah, you just never know. What happens if another team then trades to move in front of you and mm-hmm. wants to grab a player that you were eyeing, who maybe you thought you could get at 14 or 15? There's so many, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda situations that you can't predict. I think if you're in 10, you're in a good spot. Whether quarterbacks go in front of you or not, you can still take a big-time playmaker. And I wouldn't rule out, you mentioned Leonard Floyd. I think he could very well be in play for the Giants at number 10.
Yeah, his name comes up more and more and more often when it comes to the Giants. Yeah, interesting story in regard to what happened with the Baltimore Ravens and Joe Flacco. That's exactly what happened. At first, the Ravens were thinking about trading with Atlanta, trading picks and giving them as well Terrell Suggs to move up to number one because Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, really, really wanted Matt Ryan. And then it ended up they just didn't want to get rid of Suggs. They felt that he was the future, the leader of that defense, especially with an aging Ray Lewis. So they ended up trading back. And then right before traded in front of the Miami Dolphins and drafted Joe Flacco, and reports were that Bill Parcells tore the phone out of the wall in the Miami Dolphins war room.
And
because
that's what happens.
Bill Parcells wanted Flacco so bad for the Dolphins.
Why I'd stay put. That example is why I would stay put.
Yeah, so it's really, yeah, that's a story right there for you.
We want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played DraftKings, it's changing the way we play sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for joining us here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets as well. Let's head back to the lines, though. We got Jeff in Wisconsin. Jeff, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Jeff. How's things with you?
Doing good. Sitting outside, 70 and sunny.
Nice.
But just wondering, every draft always has their big bust, the big stories. You don't really know for a few years who they're going to be, but I'm wondering, out of like the top 15 guys, who are yours? Who do you really think is not gonna cut it?
Wow, I mean, you hate to say that somebody's not going to cut it at this point, considering they haven't even stepped into the NFL.
Let's go through. This is pretty.
Everyone has a gut feeling.
Let's do this, because the consensus big board 4.0 came out, and so let's go through. Okay, Tunsil.
All right.
I mean, everybody's expecting him to be like the next, like just the most amazing offensive lineman on the planet. Okay, so. I think the consensus, pretty solid. If you're Tennessee or if you're a team who's definitely in need of an offensive lineman, you know, some reports are saying that the Jets might move up and trade with Tennessee to get that number one pick. Jalen Ramsey, FSU cornerback.
Safety, too.
I'm solid on him, yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I think he's the best actual player in this draft.
Miles Jack, Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa's been falling on a few boards. Not sure why. Ezekiel Elliott, I think, has got a bright future. DeForest Buckner has a great future. Ronnie Stanley, a lot of people are expecting him to have, you know, a solid career. I guess where you're looking at the top 10, you're looking at, I think, the quarterbacks. I think the quarterbacks are kind of...
Those are the biggest ones.
They're
the
biggest hit or miss.
Yeah.
And with Goff and Wentz. I mean, I'm sitting here. I'm looking at the top 10 out of the 4.0 consensus draft, and looking at the top 10, I guess the ones that I'm like, would be Goff and Wentz. It would be the quarterback position.
Fair enough. I guess for me, I was thinking. I think I don't know where you're throwing the latest one, but I see people going so high on Laquon Treadwell. He's just too much of a one-trick pony for me. I don't think he's going to be able to do it.
He's sitting here at 11.
11.
Yes.
That's too high for me. I don't know. But, yeah, my one other question I was going to have is we're deep into free agents or in the offseason right now. I'm just wondering of, I'll say, the scraps that are left sitting out there. Who are you licking your chops over hoping we still give a call?
In terms of NFL free agency, I mean, you know, it really depends on what position you're talking about at this point, Jeff. I mean, there are certain positions where, you know, the bulk of the free agent class is off the board. So, I mean, off the top of my head here, you know, no one in particular jumps off the page. That doesn't mean that you can't find somebody that could come in late to your roster and be a playmaker. I mean, for example, you know, I think Bobby Rainey is going to have some value for the Giants, just to use him as an example, because of what he can bring to the table as a special teamer, at least, if they don't want to necessarily use Dwayne Harris on all four teams. So, you know, that I thought was a good find this late in the game. But, I mean, if you had a position that you wanted me to bring the list up, I mean, I could go through that particular position. I mean, I don't know still everybody off the top of my head who's out there. You name a position, I could look at the list.
I'm not asking if there's one guy that you have on your mind.
Off the top of my head.
In free agency?
Yeah, in free agency. There's nobody gone. At this point that's
I was
like a,
I was really hoping that the Giants would reach out to Reggie Nelson. I don't know if they did or not, but now he's signed to a club now.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, there's still some quality. Like, you could look at a guy like Jerod Powers. We brought him in for a visit. I think he would have made a fantastic slot corner from the Cardinals.
Yeah, and he also was with the Colts, too, during the course of his career.
Yeah,
I mean, he did get a look from a variety of teams based on, you know, the rumors that have been thrown out there. But, you know, it goes back to where the Giants are looking at in terms of that slot corner position. Perhaps they're eyeing somebody in the draft, number one. Number two, as I mentioned, I think Bennett Jackson is somebody that they could envision playing out of the slot too. So, you know, while that may be an attractive guy, you got to go back to the Giants and the team philosophy. We don't know what they're thinking. We don't know what they're discussing. They may already have something mapped out where they don't want to bring in a veteran to get in the way of the young guy getting reps during practice and so forth.
Fair enough.
All right, Jeff.
Yeah. That's all I had for you.
You got
Take
it.
Care, guys.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Anita. Hey, I might have to shock the Giant Nation here, but...
when do you not shock the Giant Nation?
The draft is the shaft. Free agency is the urgency. And the reason I say that, and you can use that anytime you like, Lance.
Boy, I'm writing it down right now, just so I can give you credit for it.
The reason I'm saying that is because that's the situation this team is in this season. Because of our record, because we blew it in the draft for years, free agency is the urgency. And you're talking about who's left out there. I can name like Schrader, right tackle, top 10 last year in tackles in this league. He's a restricted free agent. Atlanta wants a number two. I would give the number two instead of going for a number one and get a rookie in the draft. That would be the first guy I'd go out and get right now. And there
all right, but just notice, Charlie, there's a caveat next to that guy because he's a restricted free agent. So,
right.
You know, you have to give a little to get. You got to keep that in mind.
Right.
So, you know,
but you're gonna get a better right tackle than you are getting a guy out of college, and you're gonna get a guy who is proven, and you're gonna solidify the right side of your line with this guy. And he's a young guy, he's 26 or going on 27. He's a perfect fit. Or if the rumors are true that Davis wants to come out of retirement, the guy from San Fran, he was with his line coach, who is our line coach
Mike's
now,
Larry.
Larry. that would be a perfect guy to bring in, too. If he's going to come back, he'll want to come back to where he feels comfortable. The guy is from New Jersey area,
I think. He's a Rutgers guy, yeah. But it all depends. But, Charlie, it all depends on what you'd have to give. That he's not a free agent. He's rights
over
the San Francisco 49ers.
They're going to take a low-round pick. They're going to take a 5 or a 6. That's what they'll take.
Well, that's assuming they will take that. I mean, remember, he's still 26 years old, Charlie. He's a young guy.
Yeah, but he sat out a year, so his value is not going to be like a second round or third round pick.
I'm not saying that you're going to get a number one or a number two in return, but, you know, I mean, to say that they'll automatically just settle on a fifth or a sixth rounder, I don't know if I'd go that so far right now. Because you can make the argument that with him out of football the last year, he doesn't have nearly as much wear and tear on him at 26 years old. So there's that angle.
Yeah, there is, but it wouldn't be a first-round pick. I think if we go 10 and we go for an offensive lineman, it's a wasted pick. And the reason I'm saying that, because look at Flowers. We took him 9, and he was one of the worst tackles in the league last year. And we don't need that again this year because there is urgency. We have an urgency to get back to the playoffs this year. At least it's my urgency. And then you have John, talking today or yesterday, saying that we need impact players, and we have to get impact players. So he's putting the pressure on JR to get some impact players in this draft. So to me, I think there's going to be 3 trades within the top 10 of this draft. I think the Browns are going down. They're going to trade down.
Okay.
The Titans are going to trade down. Okay. They've been talking about trading down.
So 1 and 2 are trading down. Who else? You want to go for 3? How about San Diego? Why don't the Chargers move out of 3-2?
Well, we're going to be moving up. There'll be another team. I'm not sure which team that one's going to be, but I'm telling you, we should move up and just get 2 impact players. That's all we can get out of this draft anyway, whether we draft 12 players. We're only going to get 2 players that can step in and start this season. And if we're lucky, we'll definitely should get 1. But if we'll be lucky if we get 2. So to me, I don't care. I would trade the 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever I need to do to get up in the draft and get the players that we know are going to be impact. To me, impact player would be somebody like Ramsey as our safety because that's what we need, and a linebacker like Miles Jack. If we have to move up 3 spots to get him, I would do it. So I'm hoping that, you know, Myra's putting the pressure on JR right now to get some impact players. So if we just got to pick a bunch of players, you know, and we just going to go for an offensive lineman again, I just think they're not going to be impact players. So I'm hoping he's listening because his job's on the line. And I hope he moves up. I hope he gets the best players on the board and just goes for it. Be bold. Free agency is the urgency, you know. But the draft, we can at least get 2 players that will really fill holes that we need. So, you know, I want to get back to the Super Bowl. Eli's 35. He's not getting any younger. We don't have time to build this team 3 or 4 years down the road because Eli will be gone. And then we'll be looking for a quarterback.
All right, Charlie.
How about this?
Appreciate the phone call.
Charlie, thank you.
Yeah, Anita.
So we were not sure if you know, but Mike Mayock, he has his NFL draft position rankings 2.0 out. And, of course, we're sitting here earlier. If you missed all of the program, we had a gentleman, Jack
Wang.
Yes, who joined us, who covers UCLA and, of course, is very familiar with Miles Jack. Now, we were also talking about, okay, what else can the Giants do? So at linebacker, this is Mayock's list. Jalen Smith at 1, of course, and some concerns. What's the latest, by the way? From what I understand, last time I was hosting,
he's going to have a medical recheck.
Yeah. Has that happened yet?
I don't believe it's happened yet. I mean, I didn't see any update in terms of that. I just know was he was going to have one.
Right. And I think the importance of that medical recheck was to see how the nerves have responded, right?
And the various injuries.
So it's so sad because this is a guy that a lot of people felt could possibly go number 1 overall. So Jalen Smith, linebacker 1, Miles Jack, linebacker 2, Darren Lee 3, Reggie Ragland 4, and Deion Jones 5. That's how he is listed as linebackers. Now he also has edge rushers. Number 1, Joey Bosa. Number 2, Leonard Floyd. How about that? Number 3, Noah Spence. Number 4, Shaq Lawson. But and I know that Shaq Lawson and Noah Spence are two guys that I've heard a lot from Giants fans on this broadcast. But Mike Mayock has Leonard Floyd number two overall in regard to edge rusher coming out right behind Joey Bosa. Interesting.
Well, he's got versatility. I mean, we talk about Miles Jack moving him around. Floyd, you could pretty much move him around too. It's all about where you think you could put him in your scheme. And if you think his athleticism, you could put him down on the line and use him as an edge rusher, I mean, I can certainly see that come to fruition. I think opinions are going to vary on a player like Leonard Floyd because it all depends on you bring him in, where you're putting him. That's what it depends. If you're a team and you have a great plan, then I think there's a lot of upside. If you're sort of on the borderline where, I'm not really sure, you know, then I could see perhaps you don't have him high on the rankings. Let's head back to the phone lines. Here we got Mike in Miami. Mike, what's happening?
Hello?
Yeah. Yes. Mike, what's happening? What do you got?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Mike. How's things with you?
I was thinking, why don't we just trade down? I mean, we need an impact player because Jerry Reese messed up this year, I think he's gone. And I believe the only reason why he still have a job is because he picked up Beckham.
If you need an impactful player, why would you trade down?
Trade up. I'm saying, Nassib, you know, like to Cleveland and just come to number two or something like that. And just grab Miles Jack. But I believe he's the best player. I mean, I've seen on tape. He's quick. He hit hard and everything. And I believe that. I mean, that's an impact player. I'm tired of us bringing those offensive linemen or those O-line. We need an impact player, and that's what happened. I mean, from 2007 to 2012, there's no players. I mean, we have nobody left in the team. Okay? I mean, except Jason Pierre-Paul. I mean, Jerry's never given another. A player that he drafted. I mean, like a second contract, which is bad. That's not a good thing. Nobody ever have a second contract from Jerry Reese.
Well, that's why.
And I believe.
No, continue. Continue. I'm listening.
And that's our problem. We're not bringing guys. It's just, that's making an impact. We never have anybody. That's the reason why we like that. We 6-10. Every year, for the past two, three years. So we need an impact player. I mean, I'm tired of those offensive linemen. We need somebody that's going to come, Lawrence Taylor type of player that's going to come and dominate. We need somebody to dominate. And I believe, we're not going to pick up Miles Jack. I believe that we're going to pick up like another D-line. Because I remember like 2010 or 2009 when he grabbed from free agent. So same thing he did. Deion Grant, Chris Canty, and Rocky Bernard.
Well, I was going to say,
D-tackle and a defensive back. He did the same thing this year.
Well,
same
Mike,
thing.
Mike, then, in 2010 they drafted JPP, and you can make an argument you can make an argument in that year's draft that maybe defensive end wasn't necessarily the biggest priority position wise, and they still took the guy with the most athleticism and a guy who they thought had the most upside. So that's why I'm saying the same thing. I'm saying the same thing this year with them addressing the defensive line in the draft. I would not rule it out as still in play.
I have no problem with that, though, man, because I think that's what he's going to do. He's going to pick up Shaq Lawson. That's who he's getting. And then if Shaq Lawson don't do right, he's going to get fired because that's his last chance. I mean, the reason why he didn't get fired with Tom Coughlin, I mean, he could take Odell Beckham, and he still have a job because if he wasn't for Odell, he would have been gone too with Tom Coughlin. I'm Tom Coughlin.
All right, Mike.
Because I'm getting sick and tired of it, though. You know.
All right, Mike. Well, listen, we're up against the clock here. I want to get to a few more callers. Appreciate the phone call. As I mentioned, I still think defensive line is a position that's in play at number 10, regardless of what happened in free agency. You know, Shaq Lawson, Leonard Floyd, some of these aggressive guys that you can move around would not rule them out. Chris is in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita, how y'all doing, man?
Hi,
doing well, Chris.
Real quick, I know you got, you know, you're short of time. Wanted to just congratulate Anita on First Take. caught that. I know I'm a little late. I haven't been able to call in a while.
Thank you very much. I thought we were going to lose you for a minute,
but I see you back.
No, you won't lose me, but thank you.
Real quick, though, I know we talk draft, but here's the deal. Double O, you know what I'm saying? I guess he was kind of like redshirted last year, so to speak. A couple of questions, and I'll take it off the air. Do you think that he can be a serious backup as far as, or not even a backup, but getting to the rotation finally on the line? And those last two callers, I don't know, you know, you guys won't say it, but I'll say it. I'm not sure what league they're watching, but, you know, giving up 3, 4, 5 round picks and, you know, comparing guys to LT, that really? What are we talking about here? LT is a once-in-a-lifetime guy. We're not going to see that again. And last point real quick, as far as the safety position goes, Jerry Reese is going to stick with what he's got. You know, he made the call on those guys over the last 2 or 3 years, and they've been unfortunate as far as injuries go. But I believe that he believes he's going to stick with his convictions on bringing those guys in the first place and just see how it works, you know. Anyway, enjoy the show. Y'all have a good day. I'll take that off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much.
Just to address the double O, again, I want to say, was it last week that the coaches were made available and the defensive line coach, and I'm sorry, his name escapes me right now, I had asked him, I said, you know, you must be so excited in regard to, you know, the amount of money and bringing in all these top talented guys on the defensive line. And he said to me, I'm just as excited about double O and Kerry Wynn and these guys that have been here and will be circulating in. So he said he's just as excited. Listen, if Double O can stay healthy, I think the future is really bright for him. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do and how he's going to be rotated in here.
Oh, he's going to have an opportunity. I mean, Spags even addressed that too. The fact that, you know, he was watching from the sidelines a lot during last season. And Spags, I'm paraphrasing what he said when he spoke to the media, you know, said that it was a difficult rookie season for him because, you know, most rookies, they come in, they want to be out on the field and they want to be active, they want to play. And, you know, unfortunately, he had the itch to get back on the field, but, you know, because of the restrictions in IR, you know, he was limited. So he got a lot of classroom work in last year, but now it's a matter of taking those classroom principles and applying them to, obviously, what's on the field. One other thing I wanted to say before we wrap up here, you know, a lot of people speculating about how, you know, maybe the Giants should move up to, you know, the second overall pick, the third overall pick. So the Giants right now, based on the trade value board, the 10th pick is worth 1,300 points. The second and the third overall pick is 2,600 and 2,200. So hypothetically, if you wanted to move up to 3 in this year's draft, that's a difference of 900 points. You could potentially have to give up your second-round pick and your third-round pick this year, plus maybe even more. So then you're losing the entire depth of the remaining draft. There's not much of a pro-con trade-off there to do something like that, regardless of whether or not you're extremely high on Miles Jack, you're extremely high on Jalen Ramsey. You're sacrificing the entire depth of your draft, which is the whole point of what the draft is all about, to bring in other options to compete for jobs.
Yeah, I don't believe that the Giants are going to trade up. I think the guy that they know they want is going to be there at 10. So I don't anticipate that happening.
I think there's going to be a quality player available. And I'm sure regardless of whether the quarterbacks go or not, the Giants have a game plan where they got about 4 or 5 guys in the mix who I'm sure they could select at that 10th overall pick. Well, speaking of the draft, we'll continue to preview the prospects from various colleges. We covered UCLA today. There's a few more colleges on the horizon. We'll also be hearing from national guys who are covering the draft to see what the latest mock draft projections are and who some of the underrated players that may be moving up or moving down on the charts. We want to thank Jack Wang for weighing in and breaking down UCLA's class. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday here on Giants.com. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.